Hi, this is Jack Canfield from The Secret, and you're listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So, hello, hello, and I want to welcome you to the show. It must be Thursday. It's funny, I'm losing track of time as I'm here out in Belize on the island, and I'm actually sitting on the roof of one of the casitas. And so the casitas are built on these 22-foot concrete stilts sort of over the ocean. So as you kind of look down, you're in the water. And on the roof, there's a beautiful little thatched area. I'm not sitting under that right now. I'm actually sitting to the side of it, so I'm enjoying the sunshine on my face. And I'm just in a pair of shorts. And beside me is this little thatched area with two hammocks strung up. And it's very, very beautiful. And as I look out, I can look across to the east here, and I can see the bird sanctuary, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of birds flying around this sanctuary. It's only a very small island, but they're there year round, and they're massive. They're sort of redneck boobies, and there's all different types of birds. I almost went into give you lots of lists there, but I realized I couldn't remember what they were called. And there's a little sailboat that's anchored off to my left. And these people are chartering. They came for dinner last night on the island and the night before. And they're chartering there, and eight of them, friends from all around, one from Croatia, one from Poland, and from the United States and Canada. And they get together every year and charter their sailboat. And I used to do that a lot with my friends, and it's such a great way if you can be in a close confines with each other. And I was listening to them telling stories and laughing last night in the restaurant, and it was put a big smile on my face as I sort of went back and started to think back. And, you know, as I sat here this morning, I got up pretty early because you can hear on the west side of the island, the waves and the wind are sort of crashing onto the beach. And that's what you can hear in the background. Maybe you can just hear the waves. I'm not sure if it's picking up. I'm on the lee side of the island, which is where the wind isn't. And so that consequently, I don't have a lot of wind in my microphone. But behind me, I can certainly hear this constant barrage of waves rolling onto the beach. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day. And I thought really I was going to talk about you know, sort of the transition as I'm sitting here right now with one of my dreams under my feet. And I was thinking about who I was years ago and this sort of journey that I've gone through. And how do you end up attracting the things you want? And I started to think back to when I wasn't. You know, there was a time, obviously, in my life where I wasn't attracting what I wanted at all. I was doing drugs all the time, and most of my friends were, you know, every time I saw them, the first thing they'd do is roll up a joint or pull out some speed or something. And back then, LSD or acid was quite popular. I think today, I'm not really sure what the drugs that are popular are, but I suppose crack and you know, they have some. Oh, I suppose cocaine, but you know, and lots of alcohol. All my friends were heavy, heavy drinkers, and I came from a pub culture. And I was in trouble a lot with the police and doing things that weren't really honorable or right. And I was also really poor. You know, I was living in a very, depending on poverty is an interesting word for me, because now as I've traveled around the world, there was a time in my life where I would have considered us to be extremely poor by Western standards, where we didn't have a fridge and, you know, we lived in a condemned building and this kind of thing. That was when I was 7 and 8, that kind of age. But, you know, as I look back when I sort of left school, I mean, we were poor by many standards, but we weren't. It wasn't the sort of true definition of poverty. But you know what I realized was, as I'm sort of sitting here, is that I really couldn't see myself. I couldn't see the situation. Is that great saying? You know, you can't see the forest for the trees. And I think that's so true. It's very hard to see when we're in it. I couldn't have even sort of articulated at that time that there was an issue or there was something else. I didn't know what else was available. I kind of just accepted this was it. And of course, everyone I hung out with in that arena, most of them were the same way, you know, struggling and you know, boozing and doing drugs. And so, you know, we just sort of hung out together, right? And really for me, what happened was this accident. It was sort of an accidental thing where one day I left England and I never came back. I'm still not back. You know, obviously I went back for visits from time to time. I haven't been back for many, many years, but I left all these influences. And that was one of the turning points in my life. And I think it really, even in the beginning, I didn't notice because, of course, I just missed them like you do when you move away from anything that's familiar. I was in the process in the beginning of missing them. And, of course, I was terrified. I was just terrified. And for a year, I was terrified. And but then I started to realize, you know, if I was going to make things happen, then I had to make them happen. No one was going to come bang on my hotel room or my hostel room or on the beach where my tent was, bang on the tent and say, "Hey, Dave, would you like a better life? would you like a more beautiful home? Would you like?" I mean, that's not going to happen. So intuitively, I realized that, you know, I wanted things. I needed things. There were things in the beginning. It was survival. It was just a question of, you know, typically every day, I'd focus on a few key things. One was, you know, where was I going to stay that night? So a roof over my head. What was I going to eat? And what work would I get in order for me to be able to do those things? Because I had no money. You know, I left England with $2,000. And so that was about £1,000. And you know, so the idea for me was that my I started to understand over a short period of time, really, that my thoughts and the energy and the actions and the sort of the connections that I made each day would create a result, which in the beginning was survival. It was simply those things. And I suddenly began to realize that I could walk into a strange country. And I set up a rule around this strange country thing where when I arrived in a country, I wasn't allowed to spend any money until I had a roof over my head, a job, right? And those two things had to come before I would spend any of the money I had, which was never very much anyway. And so, like my first night in Canada, I slept on a roof in Victoria. And even though I did know some people in Victoria from Israel, I ended up sleeping on a roof the first night. And, you know, then I went about the next day to find a job, which I did, which was cleaning a hotel called the Admiral Motel in Victoria. And I think Gene and Alan still own that. And then I find somewhere to live. I mean, I had to start to build rapport quickly, and which I did with Gene and Alan. And they owned a sailboat in the Bay, Oak Bay Marina. And I lived on board their sailboat, which was only a small boat. But now I had somewhere to live. And they gave me a push bike, a bike to ride around on. So now I had transportation. I had a job. And I worked for free, by the way. I offered to work for free, and that's what I did in the beginning. I would say to someone, "Why don't you just try me out? You don't have to pay me anything. Just watch how I work." That would always surprise them and shock them. And then they would give me a chance. And then I'd work my ass off. Like, I would do things that never been done before. I would be the best at whatever job I was doing. And then after a week or so, I'd say, "Look, you know, I'm sorry. I got to go on. I got to move because I just need to make some money. And I just can't keep doing this for free." And they say, whoa, no, we'll pay you." And typically they'd pay me quite well. And they by this time they'd realize my energy and my attitude, what I brought to their business, what I contributed, how I made other people feel was all so different from what they'd experienced before. Because I was consciously going into an arena that I didn't know and consciously allowing them to see me in my full glory. Because I knew that the better I was at what I did, the more positive I was around them, the more conscious and the more giving and caring, and the more that I didn't attach my happiness to the outcome. In other words, I never once wasn't paid in the end, but I would have quite gladly left and moved somewhere else if that they hadn't offered. You know, I wasn't attached to that being the case. So then I started to realize that I had the power to change my own world. I really had this power, and it wasn't like, it wasn't something that, you know, was difficult. And I started to realize that when I matched energy, if I was around people that that they had a certain beat about them, a certain energy, a certain outlook, a certain way of seeing the world. And what I realized over time was that successful people had a certain, think of it as a wave file. Imagine a sound wave. And some are really, really tiny, and some are great big ones with big troughs and big peaks. And so imagine that everyone has a wave file. And when you match your wave, in other words, if they have this big, open, wonderful personality, and they're laughing and caring and boisterous, and you know, and you have a little tiny, tiny, tiny personality, and you're shy and withdrawn and awkward, you know, then there really isn't a match. They may see you're there, but there's a very, very small chance that you are going to attract them to you. And there's a thing called entrainment, which is this is sort of where a certain energy entrains or draws to themselves. And they've done this, like women in the same house will often end up with the same period time. You know, they'll have their period at the same time, even though when they joined the house together, they weren't. They sort of entrained their, this sort of that energy starts to work in unison. And it's very, very common. Or you can put clocks next to each other with a second hand, or watches with a second hand, and they can be out, by a minute, 2 minutes. And if you left them there side by side long enough, in the end, they would entrain. They would start to tick at exactly the same place on the same clock, and they would actually match. And again, this is all stuff that is kind of sometimes a little bit beyond imagination, but it just happens to be true. So if you saw yourself as a wave file, and you realized that successful people and happy people, they spoke and they acted and they showed up in a certain way, and they had a certain wave file, a certain energy that was big and round and deep, and they had a lot of range. They were really, really, you know, the top of the range, and then very, 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 very deep in the bottom of the range. So they had lots of personal range, which is what I'm teaching in the program. I'm here to teach about personal range, you know, that sort of that fiery sort of 10 unstoppable, you know, almost edgy, aggressive even kind of 10, or that very peaceful, meditative, spiritual one. You know, how do we live within all the range? So often people choose one end or the middle, and that's where they live their life. But I started to make a choice. And remember, I mean, I had nothing. I left England when I was just 20, and I was on this journey for a decade traveling around the world. So I started to choose that every time I went in the shower, it doesn't matter how shitty I felt, it doesn't matter if I was sick, or it doesn't matter if I was hungover, it doesn't matter, whatever. If I'd been up all night, I had no sleep. And last night, you know, I woke up, it was really funny. I woke up and I just couldn't go back to sleep. And I think it's probably a little bit of combination of this nervous anxiety I'm feeling a little bit around, you know, having all these people coming to my own resort, which is the first time I've taught at something I own. So I feel deeply responsible for so many moving parts that I've never had to concern myself with. But I started to make this choice that I would, when I was in the shower, that I would switch. And whatever was going on, I would walk outside the shower and I would be completely positive, happy. I would not focus on how I felt. I would focus on what I wanted to feel. I would not allow myself to drag my sorry ass around if I hadn't slept all night. I would simply step out of there fully empowered, fully energized, fully awake. And really that's come to serve me a lot, especially as a trainer where I've done courses which go all night long. I really haven't had sleep, and you know, you have to be able to manage that regardless. Because so often what happens is people, you know, oh, I'm not a morning person. Yeah, you know, I haven't had my coffee yet. You know, and I hear it all the time. I just want to slap them around the ear and say, wake up. You don't need that to change the way the world is. You just need to change the way we think. So what I do is, as soon as I go in the shower, I trigger everything that's powerful and positive. It's kind of like an anchor for me. When I step out of the shower, it's just, what do I want to create with my day? How's that day going to look, right? And I can tell some days I'll shower late, and I'll sort of be dragging my sorry ass around the place, and then suddenly I'm in the shower, bang, come out, fully energized, fully awake. And, you know, and I don't know if it's a gimmick, but I've lived with it for most of my life, and it really has served me very, very well. So if it's a gimmick, so what? You know, but there obviously is something deeper to it. So what I realized was, you know, I realized as I traveled through the world, not everyone was like that. And I could be incredibly positive and upbeat. And you know, a lot of people who start in personal development, they become incredibly righteous. And that's why they piss their families off and their friends off. And they push people away with their righteousness. It's like suddenly they've seen behind the magic curtain. And now they because they've had this taste of something greater or something bigger, they suddenly want to tell people what to do and how to do it. And I realized that wouldn't work. I tried that. That doesn't work at all. I hated being told what to do. And the only way that, and I think that's why so many kids struggle with their parents, and I have it with myself. You know, I treat my sons sometimes differently than I do my students. And I know that if I treated them more like my students, that, that I would have better results with them. Because what I realized was I could enter people's worlds. Once I really understood that I had this powerful wave force that I took responsibility for, that I chose each day, that people who didn't, I didn't have to overwhelm them with my big waving personality and this boisterous out there kind of thing. What I realized I could do is I could match theirs. So if they had a tiny, sensitive, very, very shy, withdrawn, you know, low self-confidence kind of energy, I could enter that world without giving up mine. All I had to do was be more observant. Now, I'm not saying I wanted that person necessarily to be in my life as a close friend, but the truth is, and this is probably why I do the work I do, when I got into their world and I noticed them without judgment, which is a big one, right? I didn't need to judge them. I just needed to meet them where they're at. What I found was because inside of me was this bigger energy source, there was this more certainty and more clarity, more passion, more curiosity, more fascination, more love for the world, more tolerance, more understanding of culture and people's faith, you know, and how people walk through the world. Because I had the ability to then enter in their world, quite odd, what would happen is that I started to affect them. And that's what I found. A lot of us have, you know, funny families. I mean, my mom and dad hadn't spoken or been together for over 40 years. Maybe they'd had a couple of conversations, but there was a lot of acrimony and a lot of upset and hate, or I would say bordering on hatred for a number of years. And, you know, for them to come together after 43 years at my home and spend 2 weeks under the same roof, what I realized is I was not going to enter their energy. Whatever energy showed up, I would can maintain my energy, but I could enter their worlds and not be affected. See, I always believe that we're either affecting people or we're infecting them. At every moment, we can infect or affect. And quite often, you know, we can infect people with a very positive energy sometimes if we don't understand where they're at, if we can't sense that some people don't have the capacity to hear us. So what ended up happening was this. When I match somebody's energy, and when I enter into their world without judgment, what I found was that they could suddenly hear me. They notice, and they, instead of resisting what's going on around me, they suddenly start to open up and start to hear me. And that's why building rapport can be something that can happen in seconds. Because if, and in fact, we were out the other night, Mike and I were out the other night, and I talked to this woman. Her husband was being a real dink. And I spoke to this woman for about 5 minutes, and I kind of find out her whole life story in a few minutes. And Mike even said to me a few days later, he said, I can't believe you found out so much so quickly. And I got a little pissed off with this guy, the way he was treating her. And I actually went and got in his face a little bit and told him to calm down. I'm not a fighter at all, but I felt like I could have fought that night. There I am. He's bigger than me. And I, my nose was on his nose. And it's actually a funny story, but a sad story. But what was more important was the reason I was affected was because in those few minutes I'd entered into her world, she disclosed so much of what was going on. And you could see it in her posture and body language, and I could see it. I could sense it. If I'm observant without being, she, you know, she didn't look happy. So I could ignore her, or I could enter into her world and just be there for a moment. I'm not sacrificing anything in myself. I'm simply curious enough. Now, I'm not giving up anything. I still own this massive wave file that's my own. But I still have the sensitivity to enter people's world that doesn't have that, so they can hear and see. And remember, if people know, like, and trust you, often there can be an impact immediately, within seconds. People always ask about building rapport. Well, if you think of yourself, what kind of wave file are you? What kind of personal range do you have? And if you have a little tiny wave file, and you're not constantly working on yourself, if you're not working, my good friend Jimmy Smith and I worked last week in Toronto together, and he was butcher for 40 years. I interviewed him. You can listen to the show. It's a great show. Anyway, him and his family have made $32 million since he became 74. He's 84 now. And he said it's because, you know, for the first 40 years of his life, he worked on the bottom half of his body cutting meat as a butcher. And for the rest of his life, which is now 44 years, right? He's 84. He's worked on from the neck up. He simply, and he carries affirmations, and he carries a daily prayer in his top pocket. You know, but, I mean, $32 million. And he has this wonderful wave file where he enters into everyone's world without judgment. He's created massive success through caring, but he doesn't give up his own energy, but he can step into places with other people. And of course, and it helps. I mean, it helps me, the fact that I've come through so much, so many challenges as a child, and stuff I've seen, and backpacking around the world and seeing so much poverty and being a part of it and understanding it. It gives me much more compassion, I think is the word that truly helps, help set us free, right, is having that compassion. So I just practiced showing up more and thinking great thoughts, taking great actions, and I realized that I had to go first. I had to go first and be 100% responsible for everything that happened. Now, so it didn't matter what happened, by the way. It didn't matter, like the other night with this guy. It's very rare I get into a confrontation with someone where, you know, I'm clenching my fist, and I mean, I probably fight like a little girl. But, you know, I mean, I have that in me. I mean, that's certainly a part of me, which I don't know if it's ever come out in the last 20 years, you know, 30 years, 40 years, 50. I don't remember the last time I felt that way. But, I mean, it's certainly a part of me, and it's certainly in there. Would I fight for the people I love? Of course. Would I fight for somebody who needs me to stand up? Would I walk past someone in the street who's getting hurt? No, I'd step in. And a lot of us won't, because we're afraid of the consequences of the outcome of that action. But obviously, you know, in that moment, I was willing to defend somebody that I felt was being treated like crap, and was willing to step in there. And what was really interesting was, by going back to this story, is the bouncers were there in seconds, and the bouncers didn't speak to me at all. Now, I had my face. I was the one that went up to him and put my face in his face and asked him to just, hey, you be nice there, right? And I can't remember exactly what I said, but it probably wasn't that enlightened. But it was around the way he was treating his wife. And it was fascinating, because the bouncers came over, and the three of them sort of surrounded him. And I turned away, and the bartender just looked at me and gave me a little nod. It's like, you okay? And it's like, yeah, I'm fine. And I sat down back with Mike, and we carried on, you know, chatting and having a beer. And they threw him out, you know, and he's an older guy, you know, probably in his 60s, and, you know, a big guy and clean cut. But it was just his energy again. You know, even though I was there and I probably stepped in, there was something about his energy that was very vibrating, very differently from mine, because I didn't lose that enlightened, and I kept, listen, I'm not enlightened, but you know what I mean, that higher energy, even though I went to a lower part of the energy I have, that higher range still existed. And I think that people felt that. That's why I wasn't cornered and asked to leave the pub. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't even asked a question. I was just simply a small nod, because the energy was still there. This other part of my being was always present, and they could obviously see that. So, you know, going first, being 100% responsible. And I think, you know, when we enter people's world, seeing what's there without judgment, you know, being in someone's world. Like, if you have a family member, right, you know, a lot of the times you talk about hanging around the five people, you know, you most want to be like. And people think they often have to give up those other people, those darker energies, so the people that are more negative. Well, you don't have to give them up if you have the ability to be with them without being infected. In other words, you can be in someone's energy without the infection happening. And what you start to do is you start to affect them. In other words, and a lot of you need to practice this with your families. I see it all the time with people who talk about, when I'm around my family, I'm just unhappy or whatever. Why not go in there and practice your own energy, your own personal range? Go in there, enter their world without judgment. Accept where they're at, meet them where they're at. Have this other part available to you, but don't get sucked in or drawn into this negative energy. Because what's going to happen is your dark side, that low ebb of your wave file, will be where you'll live. That darker place in your, and we all have it. We all have that light, enlightened way of being. We all have that shitty way of being, right? If you think of everyone's waste file, if you wanna impact more lives, then enter more spaces while keeping yourself and your own welfare, waste file. Keep investing in that. Keep growing that. Keep expanding that. And I found for my own expansion came through stepping into the unknown, constantly living outside my comfort zone, caring more about others than myself. And not that I didn't care about myself, but caring, putting other people first, living a life of service, I know this is a crazy example, but, would I wash someone's feet? Of course I would. Why not? What's hard about that? And I think Gandhi or Martin Luther King or people like that, they had that capacity to come from a deeper well of service where you can serve the world. They didn't give up their energy, and they were able to enter into the humble places of the world with and obviously discover wonder. And I find poverty is not a sign for me of failure whatsoever. Quite often it's circumstances, and for some people it's just an area that's never been explored for themselves. But being able to go in there and match that energy, and especially with negative friends, negative family members, and not get sucked in. And then watch as you affect as opposed to infect. Now in the beginning, some of these darker energies are going to push you away. They may even make fun or ridicule you. I know that a lot of my friends from England would certainly do that. As I became more and more successful, that would have been something very, very hard for them, because I didn't have the skills back then either to be successful without it being something that I was afraid of, or being something that, I couldn't still enter. I have a lot of friends now who are broke, and that's fine. I love these people. They're great friends of mine. So I don't want you to go through the world thinking that you have to leave everyone behind. You don't. What you can do is as you change your own world, you can bring people with you at their speed, though. Remember, at their speed. What you can do is, as you start to grow yourself, keep getting sucked back into the pot with all that negativity and darkness. But you can go in the pot as you become stronger. You can go in there and you can be there and have fun with the people in your family that are negative, and just enter their world. Be in that space. You're not giving up anything. You're just being with someone who has not yet left the pot, and that's what I feel is the real wonder. It's the real joy of the world, is that, when you have the ability to enter into so many spaces, that, it becomes so much more exciting, and that sort of that whole righteousness that people often have, especially when they start doing personal growth, that doesn't have to be a part of it. But the phenomenon that I really that I really discovered was, the more I showed up, the more great things showed up. The more authentic I became, the more the world treated me more beautifully. Something happened last night, and we were chatting. I'm just going to move the mic because I want to see what the time is. We're almost there. Something happened last night where we had a guy was talking about, every time he goes through the border, that, he has sort of negative, there's a lot of negativity, and he thinks that people, and then I was listening to his approach. And his approach was one where he was kind of pissed off already, pissed off at the system, pissed off at the way, the stupid questions they have to ask. And then I'm thinking, well, of course he has problems at the border. Because when you're pissed off and you're, you don't accept the fact that every single person's going to have to take off their belt, their shoes, if they go through the U.S., they're going to have to be in a freaking lineup, they're going to have to go through all these things. So what I do is I just accept that as being part of travel. So I always have a great time. I never worry about it. I just stand in there and I enter into a zone knowing that every other person, myself included, is going to go through this. And if it takes 2 hours or 4 hours or 7 hours, I still want to travel into that country. So I'm going to enjoy the process. Typically what happens, 90% of the time, is I'm treated really, really well, and I don't have a lot of problems, But I want to leave, as I wrap up the call, I think what I want to say is that, you know, I believe that we're all wizards. Let's say we have this magic wand and we can create and manifest anything we want. And what I'll give you a quick example of that. Jack Canfield is, as you know, is a friend of mine now. But I remember 2 years ago, he wasn't. Although I'd been in the circles with him and we'd been on stage at different places together, we'd never ever become friends. And I remember sitting down one day and saying, you know what, I want Jack in my life. That was really the intention. I said, I want Jack in my life. And I wanted to become friends with him. So, I mean, the first thing I had to do was kind of hang out where he hung out. And this is, you know, this. I don't want you to mix up this example. This example for you may be just hanging around more positive people. If you're climbing out the pot, it may be where positive people hang out. And I know Jack Canfield talked about that on the show I did with him. If you haven't listened to that, by the way, it's a great show. So first of all, I had to hang out more where he did, which was easy, right? And then I had to enter the world that was really the world he loved the most. When I was around him, what I noticed, and you have to notice, if you're going to enter someone's world, you can't enter it thinking you know what their world looks like. You have to enter it observing and modeling the world that they're in. And he loved to laugh and he loved humor. So when I was around him in the beginning and today, is that is still an area of great comfort. It's a great connection piece. So I you know, would let that, because I've practiced my personal range, and because I have the ability to be funny or tell jokes or you know, tell stories. Why? Because I practice those things. Why? Because it's part of range. If you're gonna create the life of your dreams, then you have to be willing to step into all things and take all things on, whether it's yoga or meditation or humor or, you know, or high ropes or, you know, jumping off. I mean, whatever it is, just being able to be comfortable in all arenas, because you can't enter spaces where you're totally uncomfortable and you're wigged out. So you have to practice going in them and getting comfortable in places where you wouldn't normally be comfortable, right? And then I got an invite from him to come and do a film, an hour interview, which is on his website, by the way, jackcanfield.com, an interview I did with him. And he has an Inner Circle Club where he interviews interesting people. And so he asked me. So my immediate thing was yes. He didn't offer to pay me to come down. He asked me if I'd fly down, which means it was going to cost me time and money. And I didn't have either, but I'd set the intention. I'd put it out there. And the universe said, hey, buddy, you want this or not? And I immediately, yes. So then I flew down. And we did our shoot, which gave us time together, and we connected. Still, we're in a studio with cameras all around us, right? So it's a different type of connection. And then I was invited to come for dinner that night. Now, I already had plans. I had a business meeting the next morning. I booked my flight. What's my answer? I'd asked for this. My intention was to spend more time and become friends. So I said, what? I said, yes. Anyway, so I phoned, changed my flights. I canceled all my meetings, and one was with some very important people that, you know, I said, look, here's this thing come up. I really got to do this. Hope you understand. I can't make it. And it was a big meeting I had to go to. And of course, when you have that clear intention, typically people are fine with it, right? So when I entered in his home, what I realized is, again, being 100% comfortable with who I am, is I have to enter as myself, not with who I think Jack needs me to be. And it's hard, you know, when you've got someone of influence like that, because you're going to feel the same way. It doesn't matter whether it's a Jack Canfield or if it's somebody who's really wealthy or somebody who's really successful. Typically, we'll feel the same way when we're coming out of a world that we're in and we want to enter into a new world of success or consciousness or whatever. In the beginning, it's so uncomfortable, it's very, very easy to get wigged out and start to feel and act unauthentically. It's almost like you're putting on a show. You put on a mask to pretend you're in the right place, which means you're awkward. And so what I did was, as soon as I walked in, said hi, big hug, I saw his wife Inga was cooking. So what would I do at my home or any one of my friends' home is I would help. So I simply went over and I started chopping vegetables and we started laughing and talking. I kind of ignored Jack, actually, and Inga and I started cooking dinner. And then I poured Jack some wine and I treated the house like it was my house. And the reason I say that is because I want people to do that when they're in my place. And I always say my greatest friends are the ones that walk in my house, open my fridge, make breakfast, and invite me. That would be awesome, right? So, you know, so we have this wonderful thing, you know, and we really, you know, we sit around, we tell stories. I'm fascinated now about them, their story, their journey. So I ask great questions, you know. So I'm in there, but I'm already part. I feel like I'm part of the family because I acted like I was. I was invited in their home, right? So that sort of immediately being at home is important. And then what would I do? I did a few things which I think are conscious, which are the little things. And I've done this all the way through my journey to success. It's the tiny things. When I work with Harv Rebecca. I did things he didn't expect. I watched what the best people were doing, and I added more to it. And so when I stayed at Jack's, this is the first time before we became friends, obviously we'd had a great night. I get up early. I make the bed, and I leave it exactly as I found it. I made a conscious choice of noticing how the pillows were when I first walk in the room, right? When I left the bathroom, I used a towel to wipe out the sink and clean. So it looked like I hadn't really been in there. Why? Why not? Because it's the small things in the end of the day. Someone has to clean it. I mean, if it wasn't me, it'd have to be Inger, right? And so I made the bed. I left a 1.5-page note of thanks and gratitude, highlighting how I felt, highlighting about the meal. And Inger mentioned that months and months later. She talked about that note being something that really touched her, right? So it's those little things, being absolutely immensely overcome with gratitude. And in fact, if you want to listen, I did a show. It's called In Jack Canfield's Garden, I think it was. And that morning when I got up after I made the bed and cleaned the shower, I actually recorded a show out in their garden. So anyway, so here's, I suppose, really the wrap-up. I'm going a little bit long on this one. I acted as if I'd always been there, as if I'd always been in his life. So here's what I want you to think about. We're attracting everything. In other words, our life, what's happening to us, our finances, our health, our friendships, everything is a reflection of who we're being. So who are you being based on your results when you're looking out there? And we attract everything good in our life and everything bad in our life. So if there's shit in your life right now, I want you to think about the fact that you are 100% responsible for what's going on. And so often, this is where we fall into victimhood, where you don't understand. You know, this has gone on or that's gone on. Well, think about it as if you were 100% responsible for everything in your life and everything not in your life, everything good in your life and everything bad in your life, all right? There's no one else to blame. And then you've got to start saying, who do I have to become to attract the things I want? What am I going to do internally, and how am I going to show up authentically to start to attract the things that I want? So notice, first of all, notice what's in your life. Then decide what you want. So these are some steps I'm making up in my head, so this isn't something I teach. But so notice what's in your life. Number two, decide what you want. Number three, who do you have to be to attract more of that? Who do you have to be to attract more of that, all right? Number four, notice and model success. Notice what those people who you want to attract, notice how they are. How do they show up? How are they being? And step into more of that, because that's inside of you. That's that personal range piece. If you're shy right now, I used to be shy when I was younger, all right? And sort of when you're shy, then, you know, you have to practice and pull yourself out. Go and do things that will allow you to expand your own personal range, all right? So practice more about range. Remember that you're always affecting or infecting at all times. So are you infecting people or you act affecting people? Now, you've got to go where they're at. Go where successful people are at. Go where these beautiful people are at. So put yourself into the firing line of these people. You can't. They're not going to come and knock on your door, right? Be yourself. You know, show up. Go first. You have to go first. You have to hug first. I mean, my good friend PK, he was on a show recently, PK Smith on co-creation. He says, you know, leaders flash first. And, you know, you have to go first. And do the little things well. Do those little things. Write those little notes. Show that you care. And don't do it because you want something. Be completely unattached to the outcome. Just do it because it's a more beautiful way to live. Do it because it's a more conscious way to live. Do it because in the end, your world will be a complete manifestation of exactly how you feel inside and exactly what you think about. Ladies and gentlemen, sorry I went long, but I'll see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.